This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Got to catch our breath here. Welcome back into Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thursday Night Football is in the books. Seattle Seahawks with an overtime thrilling win, 38-37. McDonald is able to tie it up on a JSN touchdown catch in overtime, and he says, screw it. We're not going to give the Rams the football back and a chance to win this thing. They go for it. Saubert catches it in the front of the end zone. They convert a two-point conversion. Seattle wins 38-37. They were 1.5-point favorites at close. So depending on when you bet this, whether it was the opener or later, you're either a winner or loser on Seattle or the Rams. We go way over that total of 42.5. So to help us recap that game and look at the rest of week 16, we're going to welcome in our buddy Scott Pritchard with us here, pro handicapper in studio. I didn't realize he was coming in studio, just absolute professional in every way. Big fan of your work. See you on the network with humans all the time. We'll talk about the Circa Friday Football Invitational in a minute, but talk to me about this game first. Your impressions of what Seattle did at the end, going for the win in overtime.
Well, I was here in a booth at the 50-yard line, best seat, world's best, largest sports book on the planet, because these folks will actually take a bet. Love Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, and everyone. Dustin here, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone, you know, the list goes on and on. But I have to say that congrats to the Seattle Seahawks winning a one-point game. But when they were down 30-14, for all intent and purpose, I thought the game was over and the division race was over. But what a difference a few three and outs make, compliments of Mike Stafford and the Los Angeles Rams. But the fact is, I told my girlfriend once it was 37-30, Seattle, if they score, obviously they're going to go for two, and that's exactly what they did, but it didn't mean they were going to convert. The good news is I had plus 1.5 with Seattle, minus 0.5, half off on juice. The bad news is I'm annoyed because I've got the Rams even money to win the division, and a six-figure bet coming back on the Rams and the Niners in August I've been touting the entire season. At minus 160 to make the playoffs for the 49ers and minus 160 on the Rams. So that's winner, winner, steak and lobster dinner. But don't count the Niners out because this actually opens the door for them. Going into this game, Dustin, the Seattle Seahawks, as good as they are, as good as they've been, had been winless against the Rams and the Niners. Their division record, not good, but winning today, holding serve at home. Don't want to overreact. Congrats to them. But the good news is they have the inside track for the division. The bad news is they have to go to San Fran last game after they lost handily at home week one to the same Niner team.
That is true. Scott Pritchard's with us in studio, pro handicapper at Pritchard Wins on X. Also great on TikTok as well. I suggest following him. NFC West odds. Seattle's your favorite, minus 135 after this win. Rams plus 270 and San Francisco's plus 330. When it comes to the Super Bowl, though, Scott, what do you make of this? After this game, Rams are still your favorite, plus 425. Seattle, your second shot at plus 475. Do you think it should be flipped, or do you think we're just arguing about peanuts here?
It's a great – no, we're not arguing peanuts. We're talking this involves big money and strong opinions, compliments of me. Here, I bet numbers, I bet odds, I don't bet teams. And I have to tell you, there was a huge difference, my friend, between being a number one seed. You could have the second best record in all of football, but that does not mean much if you are a five seed, meaning you're going to have to go on the road once, twice, three times a lady before you even get to the Super Bowl. So I don't care if it's Seattle or the Rams as one. They have a distinct advantage. Even they cannot find a way to lose if you don't play. Getting a bye in the first round is huge. In the second round, you play a weak sister. And in the third round, you basically have to win one game and you're at in the Super Bowl. The thing I didn't like about the Seattle Seahawks going into this game, I've gone on record many times as saying they're not going to win the Super Bowl because I had projected them to be a wild card team as good as they are. And here's what, stay with me on this, Dustin, because Week 17, they're on the road at Carolina. Mm-hmm. They have to win that road game. Then they're at the Niners road game. And then as a five seed, they're on the road. Then they're on the road again and again. Six consecutive road games the Seahawks would have to win. But all bets are off because they won tonight. And so all they really have to do is beat a good, underrated Carolina team and then knock off the Niners last game of the year, and they're the number one seed. But I don't think, if you look at the Rams, Seahawks, take three, I don't care where that game is going to take place. It's going to be a slugfest.
Yeah, and I kind of like McVay in another opportunity coming off a loss. What's weird, though, I mentioned the Rams are still favored in the Super Bowl. Seattle second, but in the NFC odds, Seattle's first. And they're, oh, I guess they're tied. They're both at plus 240. I'm sorry. They just list them in that order. Seattle first, Rams second. But they're both plus 240. Let's go to the AFC real quick, because I think you've had a pretty high opinion of the Broncos all season, right? You've been pretty high on Denver and Bo Nix in that defense. And
I would have to be high to be high in the Broncos. No,
oh,
I
no,
think they're
weren't.
Over. No, never have. They're overrated, overhyped. They beat the hapless, hopeless, coachless, pathetic, embarrassing, antique-led Raiders by three and miraculously by seven. So the Denver Broncos, they beat the Bears. I mean, they've had miracle win after miracle win after miracle win. So, but the bad news is, if you're anti-Denver like I am, they are going to be the number one seed. They are to be taken seriously because they do get to the quarterback. Bo Nix, not sold on him.
Same.
Certainly not sold on their offense, but they do have a distinct advantage. But are you telling me, I think the Bills are the best team in the AFC, and the only reason they've stumbled is because the only team, respectfully, that can beat Buffalo in the AFC is Buffalo. And they've done it 3 to 4 times, and here's why. When you turn the ball over 73% of the time in the NFL, you lose. And the Bills, that's what they did in their losses. Now they're behind the eight ball. Even if they win Sunday and the Patriots lose on the road, the Pats still have the inside track for the division. So, but Buffalo as a 5 seed, not concerned, because they're going to be going to Pittsburgh, a team they just stuck it to 26-7 in Pittsburgh as they racked up 250 rushing yards against the Steelers. And do you really think Josh Allen and the top-ranked rushing team in all of football and the number two pass defensive team in all of football, Buffalo, do you think they're going to be that concerned about going on the road to take on second-year quarterback Bo Nix? So Buffalo, to me, best team in the AFC, even though they're going to be a 5 seed. Denver, overrated, overhyped, but they are going to be seeded one, so you have to respect that, my friend.
Okay, I'm with you. I've been very anti-Denver most of the year because I don't trust Bo Nix. There's a level, though, with him where it's very Tebow-ish, where I don't think he's good, but he might be special. But at some point, that luck runs out in the post. You can't rely on these comebacks, all this drama late, and to play bad for 3 quarters and turn it on. So I'm absolutely with you. Scott Pritchard is our guest, pro handicapper, at Pritchard Wins on X. Check out all the information there. Let's talk about some games this weekend. You've got the Packers this week going to Soldier Field. Both teams dealing with a lot of injuries. No one ruled out, though, for Green Bay. However, Chicago is going to be without Roma Dunze, Luther Burden. And right now, Chicago is now the favorite at -1.5, totals 46.5. You want to go the other way with the Pack?
Absolutely. And I have, and I will, and I'll continue to bet it until they tell me no. The Chicago Bears, first of all, I'm not sold on a grown man who paints his fingernails. Number one, I don't want to go to war with this guy. Number two, I'm even less sold on their defense. We're talking about a defensive team that's ranked 27th, 28th in the league. Conversely, the Green Bay Packers are 5th in the league defensively. Defense wins championships. No, I didn't just make that up. We've heard that before, and for good reason. So the Green Bay Packers will have the inside track. Right now, it's basically a coin toss for the division, but not, in my mind, the Bears. They're a poor man's version of the Broncos in the AFC. They are like plus 20 on turnovers. And you and I know, as pro bettors and sharp handicappers, that you cannot predict turnovers. But the Bears, to go into a game thinking, okay, if we force 2 to 3 turnovers, we're going to win. Well, that's what they've done. But they've had a miracle win after miracle. They beat the Washington Commanders by 1, 25-24. The Raiders by 1. They beat the Bengals in the last 20 seconds on a 75-yard touchdown pass. So they have been doing it with smoke and mirrors. I do like their running game. I don't like their quarterback. Johnson, feel-good story, offensive coordinator from the Lions, now in the division, playing, being a coach for the Chicago Bears. He's done a good job, but let's see how he does on Saturday. I like the Packers to rebound after somewhat embarrassing themselves against an overrated Broncos team. I think it was Denver's best game of the season this past weekend, but that was then, this is now. Packers have beaten the Bears 9 of the last 10 times they played.
Scott Pritchard is with us in studio right now. Can you stick around for another segment?
Absolutely.
Do you have time?
Yeah.
All right, because I want to get your thoughts on a few things. We have to talk about the Circa Friday Football Invitational. You're in second place. I hope you don't tip your hand too much with me. I don't want to ask about too many plays because I don't want the people you're going up against right now to find out what you're on and then go opposite.
I don't care. I'm an open book. You're chasing me. So good luck and goodbye.
See, that's why we have Scott on the show. All right, real quick, though, but before we get out for this segment, the Phillip Rivers thing. Playing quarterback, if we want to call it that, they took some money today. It's on Monday Night Football. The Niners went from 6 to 5.5, total of 46.5. You got to tell me, how are people betting Phillip Rivers right now?
They're not. They're simply betting the home team dog. They're betting a West Coast team on the road, indoor, on carpet. The Indianapolis Colts, Phillip Rivers had less to do with that cover last week than I did, and I don't play football. So can we get off the Phillip Rivers man crush idea here? Because this guy, if you're objective, and ESPN is not objective. They're not. They're trying to sell you this narrative that Phillip Rivers, old man River, is back. He's not. And he never was. The window, someone asked me today on a podcast, is the window open? It's like, it's never been open. It's always been closed. What has Phillip Rivers ever won? Nothing in 16 years. Now he's been removed, but they do have a good running game, decent coach, and a decent defense. But Phillip Rivers, he throws more like the late, great Joan Rivers.
You know, what's funny, too, is Phillip Rivers looks so bad, there's actual hope, a better hope, if Anthony Richardson returns for this team. They'll look better with him. All right, we'll do more with Scott. It's at Pritchard Wins on X, PritchardPicks.com. Scott Pritchard, pro handicapper. More of his best plays, week 16 in the NFL, coming up on the other side of Cashing Out.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you making us a part of your night. However, you may be tuning in, SiriusXM 158, YouTube TV, the VSIN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States. God bless America. We got Scott Pritchard, pro handicapper, with us in studio at Pritchard Wins on X. And we got to talk about the Circa Friday Football Invitational. If you guys aren't tuning into this on Friday nights with Matt Humans, it's probably the sharpest content that's been out there in over a decade. Guys like Scott, our buddy Chris Massaro, Steve Fezzik, Chris Felica, people you know from the network, they go on, they go head-to-head with their picks, and I'm looking at the standings right now, and I know Chris Massaro's listening, so I will definitely, if I hype you up too much, Scott, I know I'm going to get a text message, he's going to be angry, ask me which side I'm on, but you're in second, you're right on his heels, you are a game back of Massaro. 64 points for him, 63 points for him. Talk to me about the season this year, though, for you. Like, what has been the bets that are consistently coming through that you're noticing?
Well, I feel strongly that last week's games are history and this weekend's games are a mystery. So I try to proactively wipe the slate clean, and it's a three-hour contract. Nothing more, nothing less. And as I said before, respectfully, Dustin, I tend to bet numbers, value, odds way more than I would ever bet teams. But to answer your question, because I respect the question as I respect you, and I want to reveal some secret sauce to the viewers, is I do tend to lean on totals, college totals in particular, and then I also tend to lean on dogs, generally speaking. I do not go into each and every game thinking, okay, I'm looking to take the points, take the points, take the points. But it just seems at the end of all my time, energy, and resources to be tied up, ultimately there is a tendency to be on unders and to be on the totals, specifically unders and or dogs. Now, I've had really good success in NFL handicapping contests, but for whatever reason, man, I mean, I wrote an article half page in the Las Vegas Review-Journal just a few short weeks ago, compliments of Todd Dewey. He has me do it about five times a year, and I went 10-2 versus the number. The problem is in the Circa Invitational, to your point, it is a challenging contest because I'm betting early, Sunday, Monday, yep. Tuesday, or late, never between 10A and 3P each and every Friday. So it is the best of the best butting heads. Now, the good news is 2 years ago, the first year I was in this contest, I took third place, a half game behind Tony the Great Gordon Derbify, who set a world record here.
He did.
He became an instant millionaire by hitting 70%+ ATS versus the number. And then last year, I took sixth place, a half game out of third. So I'd like to say, as my cronies, my TikTok followers say, I'm the epitome of continuity and consistency. But you and I know, I've been doing this long enough, that humble pie, man, is a dish that is served. You're only as good as your last pick. You mentioned Chris Massaro, one of the few guys I have not had the privilege of meeting. I do follow the dude. I respect him. I like him. And for anyone who cares, I like Alabama Friday against Oklahoma.
All right, let's get to that in a minute. I just want to talk general philosophy with you, just because Scott Pritchard is our guest, pro handicapper. It's a real treat to be able to sit down in person. And we have a new audience joining all the time. We're on Sirius XM. We're on YouTube TV. We're on like 400 radio affiliates across the country. So there's new bettors all the time. You guys are being forced to place a certain number of bets each week in this contest. As a pro handicapper, I imagine you are not normally putting out that sort of output with that many bets per week, or you're kind of forced to do certain different things here. For you, when it comes to choosing how many bets you're going to place, are you identifying a number early? Is it just more, this is a situation, this is a spot, that's what I'm going to fire on?
Love the question. And Tony Gordon, a dear, dear friend of mine, you know, success leaves clues. And as the late great, or he's not deceased yet, Warren Buffett, the dude's 90-some years old, he has said, one of the top five richest guys on the planet says, your net worth ultimately is decided by your network. And so I've always gone out of my way to surround myself with sharp, wise guys, sharps, unfair advantage players, to where you learn from the best and then you ultimately beat the best and you hope to become the best. But in my Tony the Great Gordon, Derbify talks about, and I love what he said, he talks about a process. What is your specific process? And you do not deviate. I get away a few months after the Super Bowl each and every year. I go to Thailand. And this would be the 12th consecutive time that that's happened, to clear my head, decompress, chill, relax, and get ready for next football season. But during the 5 to 6 month run from August, September until Super Bowl, each and every year, my girlfriend can attest to the fact that you don't really want to be around me, because I am one focused, hardworking, committed dog. And I love it. It's lucrative, provides a great lifestyle, but it is a mind grind. Process, duplicatable, proven, you know, focus with a capital F, concentration, no distractions, eliminate the noise, and focus. I love and respect each and every person, Dustin, in this. You're talking 25 of the world's best going head to head, and it is a dog eat dog cutthroat contest, and I absolutely love it, but the stakes are high. You know, everyone wants that green jacket, and you know, Chris Piper, my buddy who's in this contest, he's currently fifth. He won the Survivor contest for $6 million. Now he tied with four others. He netted only $1.2 million. But he said to me a couple of weeks ago, he said, listen, if I should win this contest, I'll let you try on the green jacket. And I respectfully said, well, that's the difference between you and me. If I should win, for fear of you stretching it out, per Chris Farley style, I will not let you anywhere near that green jacket. But right now it belongs to Chris Massaro.
It does. Scott Pritchard's with us, pro handicapper at Pritchard Wins on X. Find out all the info. Also, what's the website? It is PritchardsPicks.com. Real quick before I get your thoughts on Alabama. Again, I like the philosophical stuff. You've been doing this such a long time. And for new bettors, again, we all go through lulls. You kind of hinted at it. There's a moment where you're going to have a bad week or a bad run or a bad couple weeks. I was taught from someone who taught me about betting, when you're not seeing the board well, you're only allowed to bet dogs. You can identify one or two dogs. If you like the dogs, bet them, but you are not laying the wood. You're not laying it with favorites, because that means you're just trying to like sneak and steal a win because the number's telling you that team's going to win. What's your process for when things aren't going great and you lose a couple bets in a row?
It's pretty simple. It's two things: short memory, thick skin. As I said, and I live this motto, yesterday's history, today is a mystery. But I've been doing this long enough to know, you know, in the past, your ego might get in the way and you think, gosh, I've lost 3, 4, 5, 6 games in a row. ATS versus the number, there's no chance that I could lose 7, 8, 9 in a row. Yes, there is. It can and it will happen. And when it happens to me, I simply say, okay, it will happen again. But I'll evaluate and I'll reevaluate, and I will. The big key is to not overreact. I've been doing this for decades. I laugh at the people on social media that have been, they're the world's best. They've been doing this for 20 minutes. I've been doing it for 35 plus years.
And they only win, by the way. They only win.
They never post any losers. You know?
Scott Pritchard's with us, pro handicapper at Pritchard Wins on X. All right, let's talk about college football this weekend. The playoff begins. We get started Friday. Alabama and Oklahoma in a game the market really can't decide who's the favorite. It hasn't moved beyond 1.5, though. Right now I'm seeing some shops have Alabama as a favorite. You know what? I take that back. Pretty much everyone now has Oklahoma to a favorite. It was Alabama yesterday, and now Oklahoma favored minus 1, 1.5, depending on where you're shopping. You like what?
Well, I like Alabama, and for good reason. It doesn't mean I'm going to win, but I'm going to clip along at about a 55, 57% clip. Hopefully long-term. Short-term, anything is possible. This is a one-game situation, a three-hour contract. But when I look at this game, one of my betting philosophies to your earlier questions, my friend, and I know how sharp and how smart someone is based on the level of questions that I get, and you ask five-star, rock-star, superstar questions,
Scott.
I'm telling you, man, because you provoke thought. And so when I look at Alabama taking on Oklahoma, ultimately you want to be on the move early or against it late. Respectfully, do I respect the odds makers? 110%. Anyone who does what I do, their job is a lot tougher than mine. They have to post sides, totals, money lines, props on each and every game. My job is to cherry pick. I'm not throwing darts at a board. I'm cherry picking, and I'm just looking for value with a capital V. So my job is easier than theirs, but it is a little bit annoying where you're limited and or handcuffed and rejected on a regular week in and week out basis. But the fact of the matter is I absolutely love Sin City, Las Vegas. I've been here since April of 1993. It's not my first rodeo. But to my point, on the move early or against it late, this game I'm against the move because you just mentioned yesterday Alabama was a small favorite. Today they're a small dog. The reason I like Alabama in this one isolated game, it's a rematch game. Oklahoma won by a convincing, impressed, 2 points. Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Most people make the mistake of only looking at the final score. To me, as a pro better handicapper, the score, final score is just another statistic. And contrary to what Mike Ditka would say, stats are for losers. Well, dude, I respectfully disagree because the fact is, we know if you turn the football over, you lose. Alabama had not one, not two, 3 turnovers in that game that led directly to 17 of OU's 23 points. Alabama also missed a field goal. In addition to that, they had 23 first downs to 12. And
we'll be back after this, Scott. Sorry, got hit with the hard out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We've had quite a show so far. Halfway home, still plenty to get to. We'll talk more college football playoff throughout. We'll look at all of Week 16 in the NFL. But first, we got to begin with recapping the beginning of Week 16. In case you missed it, Thursday Night Football, overtime win for Seattle, 38-37. They have a chance to either tie it up or win it in overtime. Mike McDonald says, I'm going for 2 and the win. They're successful. They get it. They closed as 1.5-point favorites, but they opened as 1.5-point dogs. So depending on when and which side you bet, you're either a winner or a loser, depending on all those variables. But in the end, Seattle now in the driver's seat. NFC West, they're the favorite. NFC, they're right up there tied with the Rams as the favorite, and they're very likely going to be your one seed come the playoffs, although a lot still to finish out over the next couple weeks. To make sense of that and also look ahead to the rest of the week's action, we're going to go to the Progressive guest line, welcome in one of our favorites. He is Howard Bender, head of content over at FantasyAlarm.com, at RotoBuzzGuy on X. Also catch him over on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and Howard joins us now on the Progressive guest line. So, man, watching that game play out, Rams look like they're going to walk away with a big win, taking care of Darnold. He's having the interception problem again. Then Seattle comes back, forces overtime, and they win the game. Your thoughts on what you watched earlier?
You know, that was everything that you want to see in a game, right? NFC West, two teams battling it out for the title, to have that kind of a slugfest, to see that kind of a comeback, everything that was dramatic about that game. Oh, Sam Darnold with the turnovers, and he never wins clutch games. And how many times did Al Michaels say that, you know, Mevis never missed a kick, and then he missed a kick? I mean, there was so much action in that game. It was so fun. And I got to tell you, I am definitely riding high because I swept my bets across the board on that game, took the Rams, took the over, props on Barner, on Puka, Kenneth Walker, and even Kanata Mumfield, man. I hit those receiving yards props. I felt good, baby. I felt good.
Oh, I love it. Don't you, when you go all in, where you're like, look, I know it's risky, but there's a situation at play, no Adams, the matchup, it makes all the sense, and you nailed them. Let's stay with the props, looking at week 16 for you, and I'm with you on this one. I bet it when it came out. You got a better number, though. Devon Achane and the Miami Dolphins, they make the change at quarterback. Quinn Ewers is going to take over, taking on a Cincinnati defense that can't stop anything. When you're looking at this matchup for Achane, would you rather go rushing, receiving, going up against that Bengals front?
In all honesty, I prefer the receiving yards. I mean, listen, he's the beautiful thing about Devon Achane, and when you're betting him, is that he's on the field no matter what. If they're ahead, he's the guy chewing up the clock on the ground. If they're behind, he's catching passes out in the flat. So that's what I love so much about betting Achane. I got him at 25 and a half receiving yards, which absolutely blew me away because, you know, you look at Quinn Ewers and you're like, and here's the other reason why I actually took the over in this game. When Ewers was announced as the starter, it went from 50 and a half to 47 and a half like that. Ewers that much worse than Tua? Then look at the way Tua's played this entire season. For this guy to get benched and then to go over to Ewers, is it a 3-point swing? I don't necessarily think it is. I think that he can be serviceable enough if he leans on Achane the way that they've typically done with Tua. So I didn't really see it being that much of a differential. So I love the pass catching. You know, you're going to see some check downs when they try to blitz the quarterback. And I just, you know, for Achane to have that kind of a number, 25 and a half, last week his number was 27 and a half, and I smashed the over on that one. So this one seemed kind of like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I bet it as well. It just feels like a spot for a young quarterback, short, easy passes to a guy who, let's be fair, at times he's the number one receiver in this offense. So I love where your head's at there. And then for the game, you like the over as well, which I agree with. I think both teams are going to put up points in a matchup where they don't have much to play for other than pride, but it's a lot of guys playing for their jobs.
A lot of guys playing for their jobs, auditioning for next year. But again, you know, it's so funny, you know, people, when a team gets eliminated or a team's struggling, everybody sits there and they're like, oh, they're just going to tank. They're going to tank. They want the better pick. The players on the field don't give a crap about that, right? The players on the field are playing with pride. This is what they've been conditioned to do their entire lives, to compete, to win. So unless the coach is like, no, I'm going to pull you off the field if you do something good, these guys are going to go all out. Burrow wants to make up for last week's disgustingness. Chase is going to be an absolute monster over there. Gesicki is in a revenge game narrative. Then you look on the other side, and it's Ewers with Achane, Waddle, Waller. At least you know where all the targets are going and where all the action's going to be in this game. So, I just don't think that Ewers is that much worse than Tua has ever been. So, give me the over on that.
All right, let's talk about the Vikings and the Giants. Minnesota goes to New Jersey. They're 3-point favorites. A lot of talk about Jackson Dart and all the getting looked at for concussions. Will he stop running because he's becoming a target for defenses? But he's come out and said, Howard, he said, I'm not going to change who I am. This is part of my game, and it's been part of his game going all the way back to college at a couple different stops. And you like Dart going up against Minnesota to go over 31.5 rush yards. Tell me why.
I mean, listen, I thought the number was a little bit high, just considering all the talk about Dart. But the key factor is that he's not changing his style. The Giants don't want him to change his style. They want him to have this competitive edge. They want him to be, listen, do they want him to slide more? Do they want him to run out of bounds more? Absolutely. You want to be able to preserve him. But teams that, you know, when you draft a guy because of a certain skill set. I remember when Washington drafted RG3, and then he blew out his knee, and they tried to make him a pocket passer and not be the guy who runs around and scrambles and extends plays with his legs. And that's part and parcel of what contributed to killing RG3's career. You couldn't turn him into a pocket passer. You can't tell Jackson Dart that he's not supposed to run. So looking at this matchup here against the Saints, who have actually a pretty, not the Saints, the
Vikings and Giants.
The Vikings, I mean, who have a good pass rush, you know, I'm looking at this in the sense that Dart isn't going to change his strategy. And I think he is going to start running and taking off a little bit more.
On Saturday, as we chat here with Howard Bender, fantasyalarm.com, head of content at RotoBuzzGuy on X. You know, I like where your head's at with this play, too. I hadn't thought about it yet. I'm on the Bears, who are now the favorites going against Green Bay. They're laying 1.5, totals 46.5. No Roma Dunze. No Luther Burden III. Who are you going to look at and what bet with those two out of the lineup?
Oh, his name is Colston Loveland, right? I mean, listen, 4.5 receptions. I took the over. It's plus 125 over at BetMGM. Where else are you going to throw the ball to? Olamide Zaccheaus, DJ Moore? There's nothing beyond that. Cole Kmet's questionable for this matchup. He's banged up. He's better suited as an inline tight end. This is the kid that Ben Johnson took 10th overall in the draft. This is the kid who has developed, you know, further and further into being a quality pass-catching tight end. And I think that you have to be able to lean on him. You know, Green Bay does a pretty good job against the tight end. They rank in the top 10 in DVOA, defensive value over average. But they're still giving up about 45 yards per game on about 4 catches. So you're telling me with no Odunze and no Luther Burden that you're not going to see 6, maybe 7 targets for Colston Loveland across the middle of the field where Green Bay can be vulnerable? Man, I love it. If you're giving me that kind of plus money on that one, I'm very excited about it.
But you like the other side in this matchup, which actually correlates, right? If you think the Packers are winning, that means more throwing for the Bears. And you're going to take the money line plus 105 with Green Bay?
Sure, why not? This is more of like I just don't believe in the Bears, right? I know their defense leads the league in takeaways, but, you know, you're taking away some key weapons here for Caleb Williams. He has not played great football all season long. He's had great moments. But overall, I would say he's still gun shy about running the football himself. He's not making smart decisions on the regular. Yes, they've been coming from behind and they've been winning these games really late. But I mean, listen, when you've got a team like Green Bay that you're going up against with Matt LaFleur, who loves to run the football, he loves to slow the pace down, he loves to control the clock. I think that this is an important one. How many times have we seen Green Bay and Chicago kind of flip-flop, right? One's the 1 seed, one's the 7 seed. Now one's the 7 seed, the other one's the 1 seed. I think Green Bay kind of needs to lock this one down here. And I just don't believe that the Bears can be a consistently winning football team. I don't love Green Bay either. But, you know, when you're looking at like minus 125 for the Bears money line, give me the plus money in a coin flip matchup with a 1.5, you know, differential.
Howard, you are the best. I hope you have a great holiday. I always appreciate you doing this, and we're going to do it again very, very soon.
Thank you so much, Dustin. Always a pleasure to get to join you.
Awesome stuff from the great Howard Bender. Check him out, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and of course, fantasyalarm.com. Want to bet smarter this holiday season? Well, we have the perfect gift for you over at VSiN. Right now, take advantage of the holiday special. Get VSiN Pro Access now through May 1st for $79. That's all of the best bets, the betting splits, the tools on the website, the articles, the betting guides. Don't miss this limited time holiday special. That go to vsin.com/subscribe and check it out now.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. It's been a wild, wild day with Thursday Night Football in the books. Seattle with the win 38-37 in overtime. That does not tell the story of what we witnessed because, in case you missed it, it was billed as a potential game of the year. We received the game of the year as Seattle picks up the win, and it ended like this. Overtime, Rams score. Nacua with a monster play for 41 yards, his second touchdown of the game. He was 9-1 to have two touchdowns. Seattle then drives right back downfield. They score a touchdown by JSN. Becomes a battle in overtime between two guys atop the offensive player of the year market. We'll talk about that in a second. And Mike McDonald, with the game on the line, with the NFC West on the line, with the one seed in the NFC potentially on the line, he says, I'm not giving the Rams a second chance. I'm going for the win. They convert the two-point conversion. They pick up the W. Now, if you bet this game a day or so ago, you could have got Seattle plus 1.5. Instead, they closed minus 1.5. So depending on when and which way you bet, you were a winner or a loser on either the Rams or the Seahawks tonight. We go way over the total of 42.5 with 75 points scored in the game. But in terms of the scoring, this is what you saw, because there was a point where it looked like Seattle was done. Like Seattle wasn't going to be able to hang around as the Rams gave the ball to Seattle or turnover on downs their opening drive. Seattle then scores a touchdown by Zach Charbonnet. 8.5-1, first touchdown of the game, plus 165 anytime to make it 7-0. The Rams gave him a field goal to make it 7-3. Second quarter comes around, the Rams added a second field goal to make it 7-6. By the way, that's a theme. Both teams with a lot of miscues where they both had opportunities to run away with this game. The Rams then added a touchdown, and that made it 13-7. Terrence Ferguson, 5-1, finds pay dirt. Seattle had a chance right before the halftime break to go up, but Cooper Kupp fumbled on a massive play in the middle of the field, gave the ball back to the Rams, so we go into halftime 13-7. Out of the gates, Kenneth Walker in the second half reels off a 55-yard touchdown run. He was plus 185 to score. He had an insane day. 11 carries for 100 yards. He had 3 catches for 64 yards. Just everything you could have dreamt of from Kenneth Walker in a tough matchup, by the way, against the Rams front. The Rams then added a field goal to make it 16-14. Darnold threw an interception that was returned to the one. A ridiculous interception. By the way, one of two that he threw, another one later on. The Rams punched it in with Blake Corum to make it 23-14. He was plus 290 to get in the end zone. Fourth quarter comes around, and that's where things get crazy. Puka Nacua early in the quarter scores his first touchdown from a yard out to make it 30-14. And at that point, you start questioning, can Seattle hang with the Rams? Does Darnold just, is he always going to have issue facing this team? And then Darnold kind of proves you're right if you're thinking that, because of the ensuing drive. Down 30-14, he threw a red zone interception to a defensive lineman. So put it to you this way. They had a chance to make it at that point a 30-21 game. So within a touchdown, and they're in the red zone. Darnold throws a bad pick, his second of the day. They get bailed out. Defense gets a stop. And then Rashid Shaheed returns a punt. I believe it was 50-something yards to make it 30-22. It's a touchdown. He was 3.5-1 to score a touchdown. They get the two-point conversion. After that, the Rams then have a three-and-out scenario. Barner scores a touchdown from 26 yards out for Seattle to make it 30-30, everyone. He was plus 240 to score a touchdown in this game. That's what brought us to overtime. Nacua with the touchdown on the Rams' possession, 9-1 for his second touchdown. JSN responds with a touchdown, plus $1.20 for him. JSN ends up having 8 catches for 96 yards. He goes over his 6.5 receptions, over his 90.5 yards. More on Offensive Player of the Year in the moment. But after this game, you know, there were comments made prior to this game, I should go back, by Puka Nacua, who went on a live stream with Aiden Ross and Neon and said, quote, the refs are the worst. Some of the rules aren't. These guys are lawyers. They want to be on TV too. You don't think he's texting his friends in the group chat like, yo, you guys just saw me on Sunday Night Football. That wasn't PI, but I called it, end quote. To which Puka Nacua, after the game, then tweeted this. It's since been deleted. He said, can you say I was wrong? I appreciate you, Stripes, for your contribution, LOL. Not totally sure I'm buying it. Most of what I saw tonight I thought was the correct call. I'm not able to listen to the broadcast because I'm on the air for most of this game, but
I didn't really have a major issue with a lot of went down. There was the review on a two-point conversion, though, that we should go back to, where Sam Darnold threw the ball to the left, and it was ruled as an incompletion. However, after review, it turns out Sam Darnold actually threw the ball backwards, which made it technically a fumble. And it just so happens that Zach Charbonnet was in the end zone, picked the football up, and that technically made it a two-point conversion. It's a little dicey. It's definitely controversial. But looking at the replay, I do think they ended up getting the call right. They may have gotten it wrong on the field. Maybe there were whistles on the field that I'm missing, but I thought they got the call right after watching replay, and I had the Rams money line. I have the Rams to win the NFC. I prefer the Rams win. I mean, I also have the Seahawks. I should point out 14-1 to win the NFC preseason, but midseason. Preseason, though, I had the Rams bet. But I thought in the moment they got it right. And unfortunately, this is now a distraction because Puka Nacua has been in the news and it has nothing to do with playing football. And Sean McVay was asked about this tweet and the comments after this loss on Thursday Night Football.
Being out, you know, kind of taking like a veiled shot there at the refs. I mean,
what are you talking about?
You just put something on Twitter a couple minutes ago.
Yeah, so what are you asking me right now?
Are you okay?
I can't answer questions about something that I'm not aware of.
Okay, but are you okay with players kind of expressing frustration over things like that? Or is that something that you hope that they kind of keep to themselves?
I got to have more information before I answer any of those kind of questions.
What conversations have you had with Puka about his live stream this week?
Yeah, he was very apologetic. I don't think he understood the totality of some of the things. I think he issued that apology. I know this guy's heart. And for anybody that was offended, terribly sorry about that. I know he feels that same exact way. He's a young guy that's a great kid that's continuing to learn about, you know, just the platform that he has. I love him. We're going to continue to put our arm around him and help him learn and grow. But we never want to do things that ever offend anybody. And I know he feels that same way.
Yeah, okay. I don't love that. I don't love the tone because this has been a very kumbaya situation with Sean McVay for a long time. He is very much a player's coach. He's very much a buttoned-up dude. He's a professional, and now he's dealing with a lot of unprofessional situations coming out of his locker room. I don't like that as a distraction. I think they can rein it in, though. In terms of the playoff picture coming out of this game, you've got Seattle as your one seed. They're 12-3 on the season. With the loss, the Rams now drop from the one seed to the five seed at 11-4. Remember, that will involve now going on the road, not having home field potentially, depending on who they would play after the opening round. And in terms of the betting market, the NFC West has flipped. Seattle's your favorite at -135. The Rams are +270. Then San Francisco is +330. When we look at what's going on in the futures market as far as the NFC is concerned, they're tied atop the NFC. Seattle +240, the Rams +240. The next one after them is the Eagles at 5.5-1 and the Packers at 8-1 there. Super Bowl still has the Rams slightly ahead of Seattle. They're +425. Seahawks are +475. In terms of the award market, though, this is the big shakedown coming out of this one. Matthew Stafford was -$3 as your MVP favorite going into the game. At one point in this game when they were up 30-14, he was -$7. He's now -225. Is there a window where Drake May this weekend can go to Baltimore? And if he gets a win on the road as a dog, does Drake May come back in this conversation? I really wouldn't knock Stafford. I hate that we do the win-loss thing for quarterbacks. Stafford in an overtime loss only went 29-49 for 457, 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. Sure, there was a lull in the offense at one point. He's still playing the best of anyone in football this year. So I don't know if I'd take the award away from him. I understand why people would think that May can get back in it and why Allen at +425 absolutely has a case. But in the end, those numbers are just going to be absolutely insane. Touchdowns and completion percentage and interceptions and yardage. When it comes to Matthew Stafford, it's going to be overwhelming historical with the way he's not turning the ball over and scoring the ball on offense. So I don't think that changes. But offensive player of the year, we saw a big move. Oh, and it just flipped again. Maybe this is because of the Puka Nacua comments. So coming into this game, JSN was a heavy favorite, -$3. Puka Nacua was 15-1 for Offensive Player of the Year. Then after the game, after Nakua's performance, where, I mean, he went absolutely insane, 12 for 225 and 2 touchdowns, he became your favorite, and JSN was a slight plus price at about 130. Now it's back to JSN being -160, Nacua +135. I wonder if those comments about Puka are playing a role in people not wanting to vote for him. And this is a handicap, by the way, when you vote or when you bet on these awards, you're handicapping what these voters are going to do. And maybe some of the stuff that Puka Nacua has gotten himself into off the field, the market believes it's going to hold him back from winning the award. I still think JSN, who had a great day, with 96 yards and a touchdown in this game on 8 catches. I still think he should be the favorite, but that's a huge move on Nacua. And if you listen to our guy Mike Somich and Matt Brown yesterday, you could have bet Nacua at 15-1 and then came back today on a short number on JSN and hedged that bet and be sitting in a good position. I unfortunately did not do that. So we will get some more best bets, though, along the way over the course of the next hour. And it begins with our buddy Harry Gagnon. What is he like in the opening round of the college football playoff? We'll break it down next on Cashing Out.